time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Good afternoon.
All right, I'm Jamil Zainashev. We're here with Brew Strong. I got my co-host, John Palmer.
How you doing?
And our special guest of the week, Tasty McDowell.
Hi, gang. How you doing?
Good to have you here.
Yeah, it's great.
Here in sunny, sweaty Pacheco. Yes. Everyone talc up the junk. I did.
I did, yep.
Yeah.
Armpits, too.
I know the deal here.
Okay. We're getting a little excessive there. I don't know.
Okay.
A little talc on the junk never hurts. Well, unless you got open sore, then yeah, it can be out of hand.
So, or if you have vinegar. No, that's right. That's baking soda. Never mind.
Yeah, we're supposed to be talking about technical issues in brewing, you know. So, you know, for the
learn
amateur
to brew strong
and even pro brewer, yeah, learn to brew strong. Learning, you know, last show we did melanoidins.
Mm-hmm.
The show we're doing head retention.
That's right. Good foam.
What good? Good head. Yeah,
that's right.
What could you ask for? But good head on your beer. And we'll be covering other topics as we go forward, and we'll cover them in detail. And what we do is we get questions emailed into us, brewstrong@thebrewingnetwork.com, and people send us in questions, and we kind of sort them out into these topics, and then we cover the topic in depth, answering all the aspects of the question and telling you what the answers are. And we'll have experts such as John Palmer, or you know, maybe John and I'll bring in you know, somebody from the industry as well. Mm-hmm. To fill in that. You know, both you know, I know John just recently, speaking of head retention, he recently wrote an article for Brew Your Own magazine on head retention. John and I both do columns for Brew Your Own. I do the style profile column, and John does the
advanced brewing
column. And I'll tell you, you know, Tasty McDowell, he doesn't write a column for BYO, but he brews beer like, you know, if you just drank his beer, you go, well, okay, who cares about BYO? Tell me how you do this.
Yeah, he's our go-to guy.
I read BYO and then apply it. That's what
he makes. Yeah, he's, you know, one of the great things about Mr. Tasty here is that he applies the you know, various aspects of the technical and the experience, and applies that to his beer and throws out the stuff that doesn't work and keeps the stuff that does, and makes some of the most drinkable beer I have had in my life.
Thanks.
Well, thank you for all that beer. You know,
and beer, yeah.
Everybody who knows me, you know, when Mike's around, I'm just like, you see, I'm the one with my hand out with a glass pointed towards McDowell. Mm-hmm. That's how you can tell who I am and who McDowell is.
There you are.
And then I'll like drink the glass, and then I'll put the hand out with the glass again.
I'm the guy with the keg. You're the guy with the glass.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, we've been drinking Mike's beers for 5-7 years. I mean, I remember conferences way back. You know, it's like Mike can bring in.
I bring beer everywhere
keg.
I go, pretty much. So,
yeah. He's always got beer, and you know. I always say, well, I don't need to bring beer because Tasty's going to be there.
There you go.
Why would I bring beer? Yeah. I can just drink his. And speaking of the conferences, you know, we were all supposed to be at the conference. I know Tasty and Mr. Palmer here were both at the conference. I was supposed to be there. I was supposed to give a presentation on brewing better beer and or tips and tricks for brewing better beer. And I was very sick with pneumonia. And my good buddy here, John, he
I was telling everybody it was the clap, but
he agreed to sit in for me and do a talk on water, I guess it was. And I hear that you were a little under the weather as well when it came to the conference. You got some sort of, you know, I had pneumonia. You had
hangover.
Hangoveritis as well.
What do you expect?
Yeah, it's a beer conference. And you know, you meet all your great friends there. And so that's why it turns into being a little bit little bit of beer. So tell us about that. What happened to you?
Well, and you know, as you were saying on the lead up to NHC, I mean, it's the best event of the year. I prefer the National Homebrewers Conference, the GABF. I think the caliber of beer you get at the NHC is every bit as good as the GABF. I mean, you know.
So you're blaming it on the quality of the beer.
Well, it's so drinkable, yes.
Yeah, I mean.
I think it has something to do with the quantity.
And availability, yeah. And price.
Quantity consumed, yes.
But, you know, you, especially club night. I mean, you know, every year, club night is just fantastic where you try, you know, hundreds, literally hundreds of excellent beers. And then we had the kind of like the club brew off or kind of a best of show club night sort of thing, trying a lot of them. And they shut down club night around 1 a.m. And then you kind of gravitate over the hospitality suite, and they shut that down around 2 or 2:30.
You mean you shut that down? Around 3:30.
Yeah. Well,
and then you drunk email me. Hey, Jamel. How's it going?
Yeah.
Can't wait to do the Brew Strong show. That's how I read John's emails. I read them out loud in that voice. My wife wonders what I'm doing. Hey.
But it was a great night.
Going?
But the next morning was kind of tough. Stepping into Jamil's slot, you know, coming up with doing my water alkalinity talk that I've done many times, but you know, it's funny. Everybody kept coming up to the podium and handing me a glass of water.
It looked like a prune, apparently.
Yeah,
looked a little dried out.
Little hurting.
Well, but, what time was this seminar?
10 o'clock.
10 a.m. Yeah. Well, I imagine half the audience was pretty bagged as well.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people there. I was really surprised.
Yeah, they all got up early. Huh?
Wow. Yeah.
So 3:30 a.m. You made it back to your hotel room.
Yeah.
Did you need assistance getting back to your hotel room?
No, I was...
You got the card key in the slot after how many attempts?
I don't remember. But, you know, I got right to bed, set my alarm.
In the morning, there wasn't, like, urine all over the walls in the bathroom?
No signs. Don't remember.
Trouble hitting that tiny little hole in the middle of the seat?
I don't remember.
It's like taking the fifth. Don't remember. A little vomit sprayed all over the dresser.
But I do remember looking at the clock and saying, damn, it's 8 o'clock. I got to get up if I'm going to be in the auditorium by 10. Hmm. And I made it.
Took you 2 hours to get there?
Yeah. So, yeah. No,
that's just like in an hour rolling out of bed and standing up.
Showering and going down and getting something to eat. And
well, see, they're lucky you showed up because for me, it would have been like, oh, it's 9:55. Oh, I'll make it. I snooze for 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'd roll out in whatever clothes I was wearing the night before and stagger down there and go, okay.
What was really funny is that after the talk, I did a book signing. And then after the book signing, I went to lunch.
It's all those shaky signatures you see in the book. Those were signed at the NHC.
But afterwards, I went to lunch. And as I'm walking in the restaurant, here comes Charlie Papazian and his wife. And it's like, hey, Charlie, how's it going? He goes, hey, how are you? And it's like, oh, pretty good. And he goes, well, you didn't look so good this morning. It's like, yes, that's right. Thank you. But, you know, it's great to have the godfather of home brewing, you know.
Recognize that you're under the weather?
I was a little under the weather that morning.
How about you, Tasty? You know, all the events we go to, I never see you really totally out of control. I think, you know, maybe you are. But you know, your personality is such that you just seem mellow the whole time.
Yeah, I tend to like when I start to run out of gas, I just run out of gas and bail out kind of thing. Yeah, you know, I get my pretty good buzz going and all that. But after a while, I just get tired of drinking beer, even though there was a lot of good home brew.
How that can happen?
No, we drank a lot of good home brew there. It was great.
Yeah,
it's a fantastic event, and I tell you, if you're not a member of the AHA. You want to go to the brewingnetwork.com/store, and you can get yourself a AHA membership that gets you a discount that's worth more than the cost of your membership to the national conference. The next one's going to be in Oakland in 2009 here in our backyard, and the whole Brewing Network and the Brew Strong crew is going to be there, and we'd be loving to see you there.
Yeah, I'll be there, and I want to tell members of the AHA that, you know, that don't come to the NHC to come, because there is something like I don't know, 14,000 AHA members in the country.
I think it's 16 now.
Yeah. And at Cincinnati, we had about 1,000 people there. And I saw friends from years past that, you know, always come. I've been to the last 5 or 6 or 7 of them. And, you know, it's such a great time, you know, talking to all those people and seeing friends. And it's like, what'd you brew this year? And, you know, trying their beers. It's like, oh, yeah, this is great. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are particular brewers that I go to when I see them. And, you know, because I know they're great brewers and they brew great beers. It's a really great time. So, and I always kind of pity the people, too, that they go to the conference but don't go to the seminars. Because there's so much good brewing information at those seminars. Mm-hmm. A lot, you know, this past year, Icky gave a great talk on Berliner Weiss. You know, something, you know, where he's done the experiments and done the time and to pull together all this information. A lot of great brewing information that you're not going to hear anywhere else. You're not going to read it in the scientific journals. You're not going to necessarily catch it on the BN or other podcasts. You know, there's unique material at the National Homebrewers Conference that I encourage people to, you know, try to get to hear.
Well, and the great thing about it for me is it's like a family reunion. And if you want to be part of that family, you know, come out to the conference and, you know, you'll be welcomed in with open arms and your brothers and sisters.
Yeah, you're
there.
Amongst your own kind there.
Exactly. It's an immediate family reunion. Yeah, you'd be surprised.
Everybody's a good friend there.
Once you go, you will never, ever want to miss one. I tell you, if it wouldn't have killed me to get on that plane, and literally, it would have killed me to get on that plane and fly out there. And my wife's like, you know, it's going to kill you. You know, I would have been there. I can't believe I ended up having to miss the conference this year. It was really, you know, risking death. You know, it was a reasonable trade-off for me. But, you know, my wife didn't see it that way, and my kids didn't see it that way. So I had to skip it this year, and that's just going to make me all the more wild when it comes to 2009 here in Oakland.
Yeah.
So sign up for that. All right, so today we're talking about head retention, which is you know, one of the things you might learn at one of those NHC conferences. And what we'll do, we'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll get into a listener question, which is what kind of sparked this show. And John will go into details about it, and we'll be back right after this.
Brew right. Brew smart.
Brew strong.
This is Brew Strong.
Hey, Push, the new brewery's looking good.
Thanks, Finn. Piece by piece.
Well, let's fire her up. Whoa! Is that a new kettle?
Yeah, just got it brand new, but paid half price.
What? And that blade scale?
40% off.
The new tap handle?
$5 instead of 13. Got a new regulator for the brew stand, too, but $5 instead of 25.
Dude, where are you stealing all this stuff from?
Where else? The more beer deal of the day.
Announcing the Beer and More Beer Deal of the Day. Every day, a new fantastic deal from big items to small that will blow you away. Boil kettles, carboy carriers, sterile siphon starters, digital timers. Watch morebeer.com every day for a new deal, and you just might find the item you've been waiting for at a price you cannot believe. Hurry, because stock is limited on most items.
And that sweet Guinness cap, let me guess.
The More Beer deal of the Day.
Yeah, I knew it. Come on, let's brew something.
Find the More Beer Deal of the Day at morebeer.com. Celebrity voices impersonated.
White Labs is a leader in pure yeast and fermentation services, serving the beer, wine, and distilling industries from worldwide producers for more than a decade. White Labs has 3 all-new vials for you to pitch this year, home brewers, so fire up your kettles, fill up your fermenters, and get ready for Cry Havoc, the signature yeast strain from Charlie Papazian. This yeast can ferment both ales and lagers and is great for bottle conditioning, too. Second, a cream ale blend of ale and lager yeast strains. This blend creates a clean, crisp, light American lager-style ale. Last, a Belgian-style Saison ale yeast blend. This blend melds Belgian-style ale yeast and Saison strains to create complex, fruity aromas and flavors. Get complete fermentation quickly with this blend's spicy, earthy, and clove-like flavors. White Labs, your brewing partner for great yeast. These new strains are available now for home brewers, breweries, and homebrew shops everywhere. White Labs, it's all in the vial.
Live. Beer Radio. The Brewing Network.
The Brewcasters.
If you're just starting, don't be discouraged by all this stuff. It's so easy.
Just throw it together.
Put some sugar and some water and some yeast in there.
Yeah.
The Brewing Network.
Back to your hosts, Jamil Zainasheff and John Palmer. Putting the testicles in technical. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. We are talking about head retention.
So when was the last time you had good head retention?
Like last night. You know, I cracked open this Robust Porter, which I had brought a keg of to the anniversary party, but it stayed in my RV fridge because I had like lack of transport. I wasn't going to carry the thing with my pneumonia to the anniversary party. And, you know, I carried it back home, and my wife put it back in the fridge. And last night, a good friend of mine from San Diego, Chad Stevens, he came up with his family, and he stopped by, and I tell you, this is one of the reasons I'm a QAF member is I get all these. I mean, they come up and visit me, you know, yeah, how far away I am. And he brought some beer with him, and then I'm like, hey, you know, let's try this Robust Porter. And it turned out, you know, just a thing of beauty with a great balance. And the foam stand on this thing was, you know, there's like a 2-inch pill that rode the beer all the way to the bottom of the glass, and then you could like dump that thing into your mouth and swallow it, you know.
Makes me wonder, can you have too much head retention? Well, and do you swallow? Yes.
Yeah. You can never have too much head. Yeah. And yes, I swallow at the end. And so what brings this whole thing up? I apologize. I know this is supposed to be all about serious beer information. Not like that screwing around show I do other times. Yes. But I got a email from Joseph, and he wanted some help with head retention, and he says, I have only brewed 6 batches, all different styles, and I have had no luck with head retention. I have followed the suggested carbonation levels in Palmer's book. Wait till you see, they always blame you for it.
Well, I'm comfortable with that, actually.
Yes, waited at least 3 weeks for bottle conditioning, taken gravity checks to make sure fermentation is done, no bleach in my cleaning. I use star sand and let it properly drain out. With the last 2 batches, a Bavarian and an American-style wheat, I even went to the higher end of the carbonation level. I tried both by pouring with and without rolling and inverting to get yeast sediment back in suspension. They both pour with a nice head, but disappears in less than a minute. I even took a fork and stirred a bit, which almost caused it to foam over the glass, but again, the head died. How do I improve head retention in my beers?
That's a great question. And, you know, I hear that same sort of question from a lot of new brewers. I'm wondering, Jamil, do you know much about his process? He's an extract brewer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Extract brewer. And, I went through, you know, the glassware, dirty glassware, and a lot of other common things that cause head retention problems. And carbonation isn't a problem because if he stirred it up with a fork and it foamed over, then he's got plenty of gas in the thing.
And he's got good head formation. He just doesn't have head stability.
Right.
Because those
are
the two factors of good head formation and stability. Or, you know,
there's a lot of other
and endurance or something like that, yeah.
Alcohol.
It's all good.
Yeah. There we go.
All plays a part. Get a good head. We're just dirty. We're juvenile, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty much
too much.
Or I'm juvenile.
Yeah.
You guys are like, oh, this guy's disgusting. What's the matter with him? We should be on a better show.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Is he doing? You know, partial boils on the stove. Do you know? Any idea?
Don't know.
One thing that can, we should maybe expand on foam, you know, good foam, bad foam, how it forms.
Mm-hmm.
Good beer foam is it's built by the malt proteins, the beer proteins. There's a couple different kinds. There's protein Z. There's hoarding, which is the primary barley storage protein.
Not whoring, but hoarding.
Hoarding, as in H-O-R-D-E-I-N.
Whoring is a whole different thing.
I always get it confused with Holstein, but I don't think that has anything to do with it.
That's cattle.
Yeah. But all bull aside.
You like cattle, John?
I like tipping them. Tipping. Yep.
Do you like gladiator movies? No. All right. Continue on.
Sorry. Lipid transfer protein. Uh-huh. Yes. That's another important protein in malt. The way beer foam works, you kind of compare it to a skyscraper, you know, building a skyscraper. You've got your malt proteins, your protein Z, your hoardings that are like your girders. Those are the primary iron, truss that goes up. Then you've got your lipid transfer protein, which serves two functions. One, to bind and eliminate lipids. Lipids are anything from waxes, fats, oils. They're various natural building blocks that occur throughout, building the brewing process and so on. Those tend to degrade head formation and head retention. And lipid transfer protein acts to, sequester those and pull them out so that they don't degrade the head formation. Those act as like the struts that help strengthen the girders in a skyscraper. Then you've got your hop alpha acids and ions in solution, calcium, magnesium, aluminum, manganese, zinc. Those are your metal ions. And the hop alpha acids are like the gusset plates on the skyscraper, that you put at the joints to stiffen a joint. And the ions are kind of like the rivets that you use to, bind that plate to the structure to reinforce it. And all those elements come together to promote and stabilize the foam.
Well, you mentioned hop alpha acids, so I imagine that it can play an important part in that. But on the other hand, it's not necessarily absolutely critical, because if you get something like a Bavarian Hefeweizen, maybe you have more of something else, because those will have a great
foam.
Development and retention, and foam sand, is very durable on that. But
low IBUs, low alpha.
Low IBUs, low alpha.
That's right.
So it must not be that critical. But on the other hand, you have a real hoppy beer that tends to have a nice foam as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a system where you have checks, you have checks and balances, you have pros and cons in terms of the ingredients of the beer, the style of the beer. In a Bavarian Hefeweizen, you have a lot of protein to work with. The wheat has more protein per unit mass than barley does, or at least that makes it into the beer.
But no gussets. What about the gussets? How is that possible then?
You still have, even in a wheat beer, you have a minimum level of isoalpha acids, mm-hmm. and there's enough there with the plentiful protein. And probably the lack of lipids that's mm-hmm. In that beer versus a comparable barley beer that make for very stable foam.
Well, and then when you have a lot of hop acids and very little of the proteins, it still works.
Well, there you have a problem with lack of formation but good stability.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're drinking, like I'm looking at an IPA here, this is Avery. India Pale Ale, heck of a lot of foam stuck to the glass. It's a higher alcohol beer. It's got high alpha, probably not as much protein, but great stability. So you get different kinds of foam in different mm-hmm. styles of beer. In this particular guy's case, where he's got, he's brewing. Hefeweizens and wheat beers that should have commercial examples show great head stability and good foam formation. Maybe there's some brewing process parameters that are interfering.
Well, and so let's get back to your discussion there where you were talking about the types of things that make. For good head retention, and can you fill out some of the processes that affect those things?
Sure. So, you know, like you say, you're building the skyscraper. You've got two different kinds of malt proteins that, you know, combine to make the main girders of the foam, you know, that are the big structural components. You've got lipid transfer protein, which acts to, you know, stiffen the structure and stabilize the structure. You've got your hop alpha, and you got your cations that help to reinforce that structure. Well, then, on the other hand, you have your lipids, which are your waxes, oils, etc. You know, if you've been eating chips, if you got chapstick on, if your yeast is autolyzed, that'll help release, you know, lipids into the beer, which will degrade the foam. It's kind of like, you know, pouring oil, you know, on a beer. I mean, you know, if people, you know, everybody's seen that where you have soap suds and water and you pour oil in, you know, just the foam, you know, shoots the side. It really destabilizes foam. So lipids are a big problem. And you'll see that in, you know, beers that have been in the fermenter too long. Other factors, the brewing factors that can affect foam are your boils. If you excessively thermal load the boil, like, you know, using a jet burner versus a lower BTU burner, you know, you're really boiling the crap out of that wort, you're going to destabilize, denature a lot of the proteins that would be, you know, that would support the foam. The foam will form, but it'll quickly die off because there's no stability to it. Another thing that can affect foam retention is, you know, if you do a high gravity boil, or a partial boil, and that used to be a very common practice for extract brewers, was they would put all of their extract in a small pot on the stove, you know, do a concentrated boil, and then dilute that wort into the fermenter with, you know, a couple gallons of water to bring to get their, you know, target gravity. What that does is the wort boil is the great leveling process. It really, you know, it changes the factors by an order of magnitude. If you've got a lot of, you know, protein going into the beer, if you're using a high percentage of wheat malt, you know, you'll end up with, you know, more protein in that wort than you would if you were brewing without wheat. But after the boil, you've reduced the total protein by, you know, order of magnitude by 10 times. And so it's especially true in the case of a high gravity boil, where you're going to coagulate and go through a hot break, and a lot of protein is going to, you know, coagulate and settle out, and then you're going to dilute what's left into your fermenter, and you end up with less protein to form foam in a beer that's been made that way than if you'd done a full volume boil.
So since it's concentrated, you're getting more coagulation of those proteins. They're dropping out more, and you get less in the final boil. And that perhaps could be Joe's issue there, is if he's doing a concentrated boil, that could be part of the impact there.
That's right.
Go ahead.
John, I had head retention problems until I started letting the hot break fall back into the kettle. I used to skim it off. I know some people still do that.
Oh.
And once I start letting it fall back in, I definitely notice my beer is...
That's interesting, because I don't bother skimming it off either.
I
get great head retention.
Yeah, every beer I've got, and of course, the exception would be like high alcohol beers, like barley wine and stuff like that. Those are hard to get, you know, reasonable head retention.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense, because, you know, you're removing protein that would end up in the beer.
Right.
You know, by skimming it off, and versus letting it stay in.
Probably a lot of the protein Z's that you're referring to are probably...
Yep.
But I think, you know, the whole high alcohol thing is, I think it may be related more to, concentrated boils versus actually high alcohol, because on one of the
Total
Brewing Association forums, though, you know, one of the common myths that runs around in brewing circles is alcohol affects head retention. And there was a guy, a commercial brewer, he went ahead and he took some alcohol and he added it to various beers and saw if it affected head retention at all, and it didn't. It made no difference. He went up to like 20% alcohol, 25% alcohol, and it does not affect head retention. So it's not necessarily the alcohol itself, but part of the process. It may be yeast breaking down and releasing lipids into the beer.
In that high-alcohol environment.
Right, that's right. Exactly. Right. It may be, you know, a more concentrated boil, although you end up with more proteins. It may be, you know, who knows what, but it's not necessarily the alcohol.
Or the pH or something, because it's from the beers have different pH.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah, and Belgian triple or strong ale is a good example, too, mm-hmm. where... You know, you have a very stable head in a Belgian triple, you know, a very, you know, strong head that builds up when you pour those. And you're thinking, well, okay, why, you know, this is a high alcohol beer. Why does it have such good head retention? Well, it goes back to what Mike has said, too, where, you know, when you skim proteins that coagulate during the boil, he experienced less retention. The amount of protein that survives into the fermenter is a function of the initial concentration in the boil kettle. If you're doing a concentrated boil, you've got a really high, you know, protein concentration, a lot of that's going to coagulate and settle out. And if you don't, you know, and it's going to fall into the trub and the hops and everything else in the boil kettle, if that doesn't make it into the fermenter, then it's not going to be available to promote head retention in the final beer.
Well, it needs to be, you know, in solution as well. It's, you know,
right. So and I
leaving it in may do nothing.
Well, or very little.
Right. If you carry over the trube and brake material.
But in the case of a Belgian triple, you know, you're doing a high gravity boil. I mean, it's a, you know, 1070, you know, beer, 1080, and but yet that is a beer that the protein level has been thinned. And so you're going to get less protein coagulation in a 1070, you know, high adjunct, you know, low protein beer than you would in a 1070 all barley malt beer. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get more more protein surviving into the final beer that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean the amount of head retention that you get is going to be a kind of a function of how much protein you're putting into it. And how much protein survives in the final beer?
Well, and a lot of those Belgian beers, they use simple sugars
mm-hmm.
as well, and there's no proteins in there, right?
That's right. So you're diluting the initial protein, and you kind of maybe stay under a threshold where you get, you know, a lot of coagulation, a lot of hot break occurring that would take that protein out of solution.
Even then, they survive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what we're going to do is we'll take a short break. When we come back, what we'll do is get into some more listener email and answer some of those questions relating to head retention and talk about how all this information that you've just given us relates to
practical
brewing and what you do to get great head retention in your beers. We'll be back right after this.
Keep your carboy cap on. This is Brew Strong. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Sean O'Sullivan, the brewmaster and co-founder of the 21st Amendment Brewery and Restaurant in San Francisco. 6 years ago, Nico Freccia and I opened the 21st Amendment on 2nd Street with the intent of bringing back the local neighborhood brew pub. Well, the neighborhood has really changed over the years, but the 21st Amendment still remains a great place for people to meet over a terrific meal and a tasty pint of beer. In the past, the only way you could enjoy the 21st Amendment's handcrafted beers was at the brew pub. Well, all that has changed. Now, the 21st Amendment beers are available in cans. That's right, cans. When was the last time you had a great beer in a can? Well, that day has come. We're offering our world-famous Watermelon Wheat and 21A IPA in cans. Cans are a better package than glass because cans keep the beer fresher longer, but you can also take cans to places where bottles can't go, like the beach, lake, golf courses, and sporting events. So join us in the revolution to take back the can from the big breweries and crack open a cold 21A craft beer in a can. The 21st Amendment, 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park.
Did you know that every day a brewcaster goes to bed hungry? Did you know that that brewcaster is silently calling for the help of people just like you? Do you know that every day the unicorn and the rainbow have to blow sailors for loose change? For less than the cost of a half-calf, quad-shot, venti, extra-hot soy milk, triple-pump, hazel, low-fat foam, double-cupped macchiato a day, you can help starving adults in Pacheco. Your love can be felt for as little as 7 cents a day. Visit thebrewingnetwork.com/donate to sign up today for as little as $2 a month. Private first class in the BN Army. Buy your way up the ranks as corporal, sergeant, ranger, or colonel with an easy-to-do monthly donation that keeps brewcasters alive and your favorite internet radio station broadcasting. No donation is too small to help those in need. Can't you find it in your heart to share your love with a brewcaster? In return, you will enjoy the wealth of knowledge that comes with every episode of The Session, The Jamil Show, and yes, even that other show. Thank you for listening, and please sign up for your donation at thebrewingnetwork.com/donate today.
Entertainment you want. Information you need.
The Brewing Network.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
We're back. I think there's some slapping in order in between these breaks here. That's one of the things that police say always, you know, I got to have my John here, but, you know, police say always brought...
He was always slapping? Or?
Yeah, he was always slapping his junk around during the break, and that was very entertaining.
Okay.
I must say, you know, just the thwacking sound all by itself was quite melodious during the breaks. He was always... He makes me laugh. You guys aren't making me laugh. I don't know. I'm like, I'm worried here. I'm starting to fade. I don't know.
Guess you had to be there. Okay.
Yes. So we're talking about head.
Mm-hmm.
And how you get great head in your beer. And Joaquin emailed me, and he was saying also along these same lines of head retention. He says, I get notoriously bad head retention on my dark beers. For some reason, porter and stout alike. So I carbonated my stout a little too much, bottle conditioned, in order to get more head. I use 6 grams priming sugar per liter, which is what I use for light ales. Now my stout has too much carbonation and still bad head retention, even with 20% flaked barley in the grain bill. Is this just the nature of the beast? Do I accept that this will happen? Carbonate less and live with bad head? Sheesh. Or is there something that I can do?
That's an interesting question. Interesting set of factors there. Interestingly, melanoidins, high melanoidin content, tends to promote head retention.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So generally, you don't look for head degradation or head instability in dark beers. I wonder if, you know, water has a factor to do with it. Stress on the yeast, you know, releasing lipids that could impact his head retention. There's other yeast factors. Yeast exudes an enzyme called proteinase that can degrade foam proteins over time. So when you don't pasteurize a beer and bottle condition the beer like most homebrewers do, a long time in the bottle, this enzyme can keep working and will degrade in head retention with time. I don't know that that's the case here, but, you know, there's several possibilities that could be at work here.
And Tasty, what about you? Have you ever had a problem with head retention? And no. Did it reply to dark beers like porters and stouts?
No, I don't notice it so much in dark versus light. I do generally in almost all my beers. I have some wheat malt in the recipe. To me, it seems to work. Gives me, you know, makes my beer a little bit hazy, but I generally filter my beer so that doesn't show up in the final product. But if you don't filter, it may give a little bit of haze into your beer, the addition of the yeast, of the wheat malt.
Do you have any other information from Joaquim about his brewing process?
No, you know, he mentions, you know, some other questions about brewing and yeasts and stuff like that. You know, a couple of things I have to say on the subject is, you know, like John was saying earlier, you know, the more melanoidin rich your beer is, the higher gravity your beer is, the better the head retention tends to be. So if you're making yourself a Russian Imperial Stout, and one of the ways you can tell generally, you know, if you've got a lot of head-forming proteins in your beer, like Russian Imperial Stout, you'll ferment that thing, and that thing will just go like nuts, and it'll blow off, and there's a lot of protein involvement in the Kroisin with the yeast and the carbon dioxide, and you get you can get something blowing off. And that tends to be in your bigger and darker beers.
Yeah, and that could be a factor. If he's doing blow-off during his fermentation,
Blow off a lot of that as
well.
Yeah,
exactly.
Sure. Well, and one thing I've heard in the past is that, you know, the head forming proteins are only used once. So it develops a head, and then once it's done, it's done. It's done its thing. It drops to the bottom, and it's no longer available to form head again. So if you're doing a lot of things with your beer that tend to use those up, and it might be, you know, during fermentation, or it might be during transfers, and you're stirring it up a lot, or you're bubbling CO2 through it for one other reason or another, that might have some impact. Another thing is, when you're brewing a stout, so the example I gave at the beginning was this robust porter that I brewed. Great head, no problem. You know, you know, it's not necessarily dark beers. When he was talking about stouts, he increased the carbonation on his stouts. Now, when you are brewing something like a dry stout, something that you know, really deserves a low level of carbonation, you see these stouts served you know, on nitrogen, and you see these, you know, great heads that they get. You know, part of that is keeping the, you know, forming the head, but also the CO2 portion of it is lower in the beer. It's a low carbonation beer. If you over carbonate it trying to generate head, what you do is you get a really acidic, carbonic bite to the beer. It makes the beer seem thin. It makes the beer seem harsh. It makes a lot of trouble, you know, as far as the flavor and perception of the beer. So you really don't want to do that. It's better to go without head than it is to overcarbonate something like a dry stout and kind of ruin the drinkability of the beer. So I think that's a really important thing.
Yeah. This question goes back to, there's a lot of factors that can affect any one parameter in brewing, you know, head retention or pH or, you know, what have you, IBUs, for instance. And I would encourage everyone, when they write into the show, you know, at brewstrong@thebrewingnetwork.com, to, you know, include as much process information as you can in your email. You know, I mean, these questions are great. They're good. They're nice and specific. But also, you know, take time to include a description of your brewing process, because all these factors can impact the answer to your question.
Yeah, a lot of different factors in that impact it. One of the things that Charlie Papazian says is that he always does a protein rest on every beer he brews, regardless of what the grist is comprised of.
Mm-hmm.
And he believes that increases his head retention every time. Now, my theory on that is, well, it might in some cases, it might not in others, and if you go too far with that, it actually could hurt head retention.
Yeah, that's true. The effectiveness of protein rest has a lot to do with your grist bill. Lower modified malts definitely benefit from a protein rest in terms of head retention and hay stability and a host of other things that are affected by protein rest. Highly modified malts, if you do a protein rest on a highly modified malt, what you're going to do is you're going to trade off the percentages of protein Z versus hordene, and you may see, you know, very great head formation in a beer that, you know, in a beer made from a highly modified malt, and I'm talking about a Kolbach index greater than 40. That's also known as the soluble to total protein ratio. greater than 40. Those beers have all the protein Z that they need for, you know, that's like the best girder material. But hoarding is affected by protein rests, and you can end up forming a larger, faster forming head, but it won't be as stable as one that was not made with a protein rest from a highly modified malt. If I made myself clear there.
Okay, I get it.
And Mike, do you do protein rests at all?
No, I just do an intermediate rest. I go in about 145, then I bump up to my sack temperature, whatever that is for the beer.
Yeah, so you're just working the sacrification rests.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the intermediate to me is just mix. I use that to ensure that I have a pretty fermentable beer, because like my beers are finished, you know, pretty dry.
Yeah, same here. I tend to skip the protein rest, and I have no problem with head retention. Yeah. And I think one of the rare times I do is actually a combination protein and beta-glucan rest in something like a dry stout where you're using a lot of flaked barley.
Oh, yeah.
And I may do that. And also you want a fairly thin beer with a dry stout. But, I really don't think it's necessary. I whatever is successful for you is perhaps what you should be doing. But try a couple of different things, and maybe that isn't the thing that brings success when it comes to head retention.
Let me offer a couple more points on a protein rest. You know, the protein rest, different books that you read will talk about, you know, accentuating head retention versus, you know, decreasing haze. Really, the whole protein rest regime, you have literally, you know, dozens of proteinase and protease type enzymes that are active. And trying to dial in a particular temperature versus another particular temperature to, you know, accentuate head retention versus, you know, haze is kind of fruitless. It's really like putting the blender on puree. You know, a couple quick hits on the blender, you'll get better head retention from doing a protein rest. You let it go anywhere, you know, over that, anything too long, and I'm talking about probably anything for today's malts over 15 minutes.
Yeah, I limit myself to 15 minutes.
Yeah, you're really starting to degrade your head retention. You may see great head formation, but that head's going to fall quickly. So, you know, Joaquim, I wish I knew more about your process, because then I could offer more, you know, ifs and buts and so on to help define what may be the problem.
Well, what about on the ingredient side? What about these malts like Carafoam, Carapils? Those can obviously be used to help head retention, right?
That's right. They can. They're contributing more of the foam active or foam promoting proteins and so on.
And those will carry through, you know, through the mash all the way to the boil if you do things right.
But like I said earlier, you know, a big difference in wort composition before the boil translates to a small difference in wort composition after the boil.
Oh, that's right.
So, you know, these Carafoam and Carapils and other, and, you know, adding wheat malt to your beers, to your grist, they will have a positive effect on foam, but, you know, the boil is the great, you know, leveling factor, and large differences become small differences, so you will see a difference, but it's going to be perhaps smaller than what you anticipated.
Gotcha.
But still worth doing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and one thing Joaquim and I were going back and forth on is things like 60-shilling ales. And you had mentioned earlier, you know, letting a beer sit for a long period of time, that could affect head retention. And what I found, especially in the smaller beers, the very first time I made a 60-shilling ale many years ago, the thing was thin, the bubbles were very large, and it tastes like water. It was just horrible. And somehow I stuck the keg, you know, off in one of the cold storage, and I forgot about it because it was so bad. I was going to pour it out. I just somehow lost track of it and didn't pour it out. And about a year later, I came back across this keg. I'm like, what the heck is this? I'm like, 60-shilling? I'm like, wow, you know, it's a year old. So I wanted to taste how it would be supposedly oxidized and horrible, like people say these light, these small beers are. And I poured it, and it was a thing of beauty.
Hmm.
Giant head that lasted, you know, again, it formed that slug of foam that never went away. You know, yeah, I could have left it there for a half hour and it would have had no change. And the beer, you know, just had really developed. And I think there's something to, you know, letting the beer develop over time and having...
Well, you
having,
know, it just goes to show that you demand.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. And if you want to read about the man, there's that book called Brewing Classic Styles. You can
by pick John up Palmer and Jamil Zanifet.
No, it's Jamil Zanifet and John Palmer. And
right.
You can pick that up in the Brewing Network store, and you get a signed copy. And there's also some other book in there called How to Brew. But you don't really need that. You need the Brewing Classic
Style. Yeah, don't start there.
And anyways, and what would happen is, you know, it makes a big difference. I was discussing this with a couple of people, and, you know, one of the theories is, well, you know, there's, especially right after you brew a beer, if you're not filtering it, there's, you know, a very fine particulate matter that acts as nucleation sites for the CO2.
That's right.
And it takes quite a bit of time for those to completely drift down through a keg of beer and fall to the bottom. So a certain amount of time ought to be allowed for that, if you know, especially if you're not filtering.
Polyphenol and tannin precipitation,
you know, those,
yeah,
those things can really spark, you know, the large bubble formation that seems, you know, make the beer seem thin. So, you know, that is one of the things. Don't give up on a beer that, you know, let it sit for a while, see what happens. Again, if you have a lot of yeast in there and the yeast die, I think, you know, there is a negative effect on
that's right,
head retention. But, you know, letting a beer sit cold for a while, you know, if it's not contaminated or whatever, it actually does quite a good job.
Good point.
He's the man. That's why we call him the man, huh?
There you go. That's why I got it tattooed across my nuts. Yes. And Steve from Cleveland, he was saying, I have deleted my protein rest from my alts. And this is a much longer email, but we're talking about protein rests and stuff in alts and Hellas and stuff. He said, I have deleted the protein rest from my alts and lagers as I think they are a bit thin, and I've read that a protein rest may actually harm head retention and body. And he says he's used all Durst and Vireman malts, which are fine. And you were saying earlier, John, that if you went past certain points, like putting in a blender, and it's okay to chop it up a little bit and make it nice and consistent, and
right,
that helps. But you keep chopping it, and it turns into, you know, just liquid
puree.
Snot, and
exactly,
and, you're chopping those proteins too short. It goes from long proteins to medium proteins to the shorter proteins, and
pretty
you
much know, all natural processes are a matter of optimums. You can have too little, and you can have too much. And
you can never have too much head.
But you can have too much protein rest, and if you take, you know, if you hit the blender a couple times and you know, degrade those large proteins into head positive proteins, you know, medium sized stuff, great. If you do it a little too long, those medium sized degrade into small proteins and amino acids, which don't enhance head formation. And actually, excessive amino acids, excessive FAN, which we, you know, talk about as a desirable thing,
free amino nitrogen.
Right. We talk about that as a desirable thing for most fermentations. But if you put too much FAN in, that's a form of lipid, and it will degrade mm-hmm. head formation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And one last thing before we take a quick break. Russell was brewing a toasted coconut chocolate porter. And they were telling him, they said, stay away from throwing cocoa beans into the boil because it'll extract fat. And it'll affect head retention. You should use cocoa powder instead. What do you think?
Well, yeah, definitely the fats. You know, fats are a form of lipid. Mm-hmm. They're going to impact mm-hmm. head retention. Also, the you know, the fats in cocoa beans are going to oxidize, and mm-hmm. you're going to get some oxidation flavors, you know, quickly out of that beer.
Well, and. You know, this is what I tell people as well. I say, well, you know, go with the cocoa powder. It has less fat. They've removed a lot of the fat. And, you know, go with the lowest fat cocoa powder you can get your hands on and do that. And I've heard a lot of people say, no. You know, the cocoa beans are fine. You know, I don't have any problem with head retention. And I think, you know, maybe it's a balancing act. Again, this is a dark
right.
beer. You know, a lot of people make it higher alcohol, things like that. I would worry more about the coconut. Coconut,
true.
You know, shaved coconut has a lot of fat in it,
yeah,
and that could be much worse. And But the, you know, when you boil things, the fat tends to rise to the top. If you were able to draw that off of the bottom, maybe you would not have so much fat in your beer.
That's true.
Maybe being careful and racking from the boil kettle to the fermenter, you think that would make a difference, John?
Yeah, it would. It would help you get some of the lipids out of solution, mm-hmm. and keep your head formation in the beer.
How about you, Tasty? Have you done any of these beers with coconut or any fat producing type?
No, I don't. No, I haven't made beers that seem to call for those. I do, pay a lot of attention to, what I transfer to my fermenter and make sure that I don't get a lot of the
dog hair
of the cold break in there. Mm-hmm. Which I, that's where the lipids are going to basically be at, right?
Yeah, the cold break and the hot break too.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, there's, as I said, there's so many, too much, too little aspects in all natural processes in brewing that, it's definitely the case.
Yeah.
You need a little bit of hot break and a little bit of cold break to help, improve the fermentation health of the beer. But too much is going to start degrading things.
Well, if you have a heavy oil, might rise to the surface as part of the boil.
Yeah. I was thinking about something else. Right.
Got that faraway look in his eyes. Seemed kind of romantic there. We held hands and then, it passed. All right, so we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to kind of get into recapping. And it's actually the segment where if you're a live listener, you would be in the chat. You'd ask questions about the topic that we're doing, and we'd answer them for you live. But, it's our first couple of shows, and we're actually haven't announced this yet, so we don't have the live listenership that we so desire. But these shows are done, unedited. So it's pretty exciting here in the studio. But we go like
we should head out on the street.
Style.
Yeah, go out on the street and remote microphone.
There you go.
Stop the first passerby.
The man on the street. We got Shad over there. He could be the man on the street.
Come up with a question.
Yeah. We'll be back right after this.
Brew right. Brew smart. Brew strong.
This is Brew Strong.
Oh crap, it's the hop shortage.
No, not the organic, free-range, oyster Russian Imperial coffee stout.
It's all gone. We'll never brew again.
Damn this hop shortage. Damn it to hell.
Oi, away off your wee f***ing hop shortage.
Who are you?
A f***ing Scottish 80 shilling, and you cannot brew a Scottish 80 shilling like you was mixing f***ing cement with f***ing hops instead of gravel, your great f***ing ass.
Use less hops, brew more beer. Northern Brewer has kits and ingredients for dozens of worldwide beer styles that don't require a lot of hops to make a great pint, like the bloodthirsty and abusive Scottish 80 shilling. Keep drinking great beer. Order at northernbrewer.com and get flat rate $7.99 shipping anywhere in the contiguous U.S. One beer kit, $7.99 shipping. 1 million beer kits, $7.99 shipping.
Together we can beat this hop shortage.
My lambic!
It'll only f***ing help it.
This is www.thebrewingnetwork.com.
Sit down next to it, grab yourself a paper towel, and watch those yeast have sex.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Back to the two guys that know how to turn beer into beer. This is Brew Strong.
Oh yeah, we're back. We're talking head retention, and I think we got another
good head
question or two that came in, Mike.
Yeah, I get this question all the time from homebrewers.
How are you so attractive?
I don't know. Yeah, well, they don't ask that.
How are you so successful?
But they want to know
the average rainfall in the Amazon River Basin.
Yeah, really. They're always asking me, does Star Sand affect head retention?
Well, and
what are they saying there? I don't know.
One of the things about Star Sand that you'll notice, I use Star Sand in, for example, in my kegs, when I'm kegging my beer,
sure.
And I rack the beer in there,
oh, yeah.
And you'll notice that there might be a slight sheen on the surface.
Yeah.
And the sheen is like a surfactant that they put in that actually helps the Star Sand...
touch everything.
Is sanitized, actually coat things and be a much more effective sanitizer.
Okay.
Without that, it would not be nearly as effective. The problem with the surfactant is that it will impact head retention. Now, the question is, you know, is that so much that it is worth trading off effective sanitizing versus, you know, the minimal impact it might have on the head retention? Personally, I use Starsan, and I see no problems with it, but I do believe it has a small impact into head retention.
Yeah, I think if you look at Starsan's, you know, usage suggestions, I mean, they're saying drain the keg, drain the bottles, drain the fermenter, you know, where you don't want to, you know, rack your beer into, you know,
a half a carboy of Starsan, like Justin.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. You hopefully you're just talking about a small percentage of foam.
Right.
And the less,
right,
the better. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree that the surfactant could definitely be a factor.
Yeah. If people don't believe that Justin would rack his word into carboy of Starsan, then you haven't listened to the Sunday show, the Sunday session on thebrewingnetwork.com. Great show, a lot of interesting guests and information as well, and you know, well worth listening to. And there's years of archives, keep you busy on your commute for some time to come. All right, so I think we've done an admirable job of discussing head here, and so let's recap. The things to look out for when you are hoping for good head is mash temperature. So you know, don't do a protein rest, or do a short. You look for a guy with long fingers. Is that what you're indicating, Justin? I'm sorry.
Breasts, Jamil. Breasts. Damn it! Okay. Not a guy with long fingers.
Wasn't quite sure what that signal was, you know? It's you know, all these gang symbols.
Yeah, that's not an international symbol for breasts, I don't think. No.
Yeah, it's more like this. Like this.
That's man breasts with the symbol you did.
No, like this.
That's international.
This is like doctor is sterile for surgery.
No, that's,
you know,
giant breasts. Yours was man breasts.
Ah, this boy, we need to teach him a few things. Anyways, so where was I? All right, so protein rest. You know, if you're going to do a protein rest, keep it short. You know, 15 minutes max. You know, you don't want to chop up those longer proteins into little itty bitty bits, because they're not going to, you know, it's the medium length proteins that actually do the formation and retention. So,
proteins are bad.
Right. But longer is better.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, you want the medium ones.
Can never be too long. And, if you're in the boil, you know, concentrated boils can have an impact, and also a recipe. So if you want to improve head retention, yeah, add things like carafoam or carapils, some wheat malt, things like that. But
flake
just
barley.
Flake barley. Be aware that the impact, you know, you can make a large change there, and it will have some change, but the boil does tend to remove a lot of that excess protein and kind of limit it down. So there's probably a practical limit there for you. As far as adjuncts that you might add to the beer, if you're using things like cocoa beans or coconut or things that are oily, you want to try and avoid that, but also be careful about you know, racking your wort off from that. And Mike also noticed that in his beers, you know, if he skimmed the break material that formed on top of the wort as he was boiling, if he skimmed that off, his head retention was worse. I personally haven't done a lot of experimentation with that, but what I did, I noticed that material did not have any negative impact. So since then, many years, I leave all my hot break or my break material that forms, it all stays in there in the boil, and I have no problems with head retention. So it definitely does not negatively impact that.
Mm-hmm. You know, you remind me that in Graham Sanders' podcast, he mentioned that he routinely skims his boil, but I don't recall him saying that he's noticed any variance in or degradation of head retention. So,
well, he has a giant head, so maybe he has very little concept of what proper head is. So that might be the impact there. Mm-hmm. All right. So any other tips or tricks on improving head retention in beers, you guys? Have we covered it? We nailed
this thing
to the wall. I want to
make this one point, though. The number one cause of poor head retention is the dirty glass, of course.
Oh, yeah,
that.
Absolutely. That,
right?
Yes, yeah,
exactly.
Great. Yeah, you know, one of the things that Mike insists on bringing around is these, you know, clean taster cups. Whenever he's sampling his beer, he's not going to put in some, you know, used diaper pail. He's, you know, proper glassware is very important. To, if you're going to spend all this money and all this time on making yourself good beer, you know, put it in a, you know, a clean glass. Be aware if you're using a anti-spotting agent in your dishwasher.
Jet dry,
something like that. It's, again, it'll coat the glassware and it will impact your head retention as well. Dirty glasses, lipstick, you know, I know Justin, his glasses end up with lots of lipstick on them.
From all the hot chicks.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, right. Exactly. Yes, right.
Right. That's what we meant. You know, and any dead maggots in the bottom of the glassware, anything like that is gonna impact your beer. Leaving a lot of yeast in the beer, you know, not racking off the yeast at the end of everything being completely fermented. And I'm not talking like, you know, after a week you need to get off the yeast, but you know, after a month, you know, maybe it's been sitting in the keg, transfer it to another keg, get it off the yeast. You don't want that yeast breaking down, the lipids being released, impacting
In fact, for a lot of brewers, if they're not giving enough time in the primary fermenter for a lot of that yeast, suspended yeast in the fermentation to settle out, they're going to end up carrying more yeast into the bottle than probably was, you know, beneficial for the beer.
You'll have a giant load.
That's right.
That comes over into your keg. Yep. All right. I think that's a fine discussion. Thank you, gentlemen. John Palmer, my co-host, and
Mike
Tasty McDowell as our guest host.
Thanks for having me
tonight. Thank you very much, and Brew Strong.
Brew Strong.